Hey there, podcast listeners. This is Justin Asiri from Beyond the Uniform. My goal is to provide active duty military personnel with tools and resources to help them figure out what they want to do when they make that transition to civilian life. This week, I'm speaking with Shauna Sopko. A great, great interview. Shauna is a product quality program manager at Nest. She does an exceptional job of breaking down the functional role of product and program manager, which for the military accounts for about 10% of officers in the functional roles they choose. She breaks that down. She talks about life at Nest. She talks about her experience at Stanford Business School. She has some really great advice, whether you are going to grad school or not, on how to prepare for interviews, how to shape your experience into a story that's relatable and very easily understandable for someone in the civilian world. And she has some great ideas as well about internships and using them to figure out what you want to do, because there are a lot of options once you get out of the military. So here is my interview with Shauna Sopko. Yeah, it's great to meet you, Shauna. I appreciate Brad putting us in contact and excited to learn more about your background.
Yes, definitely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So just for your background, I was doing a little bit of research, so and correct me if I misrepresent anything here, but you graduated from Annapolis in 2005. You got a Bachelor's of Science in Systems Engineering. You went straight from the Naval Academy to the Naval Postgraduate School, where you got your Master's in Systems Engineering, and then spent just over six years as a surface warfare officer, first on the destroyer, the USS Shoup. And then with Destroyer Squadron 9 and a flag aide to the Naval Academy Superintendent, which I imagine is quite the baller role going around with the soup. When you got out, you went to the Stanford Graduate School of Business. You were there 2012 to 2014, and looks like you interned at Apple as a product manager in their AppleCare hardware system. And something there must have fit, because you went on in that capacity when you graduated. You went to Nest as a product quality program manager. And just for quick context, if people are unfamiliar with Nest, they manufacture these sensor-driven Wi-Fi-enabled self-learning thermostats and smoke detectors. They got bought by Google in 2014 for $3.2 billion, so a very, very successful story here in Silicon Valley. But, you know, I'm excited to delve into your background, particularly around your work at Nest, but I appreciate your joining me.
Yes, no, thanks. And yes, that is all accurate. Quite the research. And I'm currently still working at Nest now for just over 2 years.
Awesome. And I'm excited. I'll be connecting with your husband, Jimmy, on early next week. So I'm curious to hear the contrasting perspectives as he went straight from the Navy to industry. And you had your second master's degree in the interim.
Yes, exactly. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, so the first thing I wanted to dive in on is learning more about at what point you knew you were going to leave the military and how you approached that decision.
Yeah, so for me, I knew when I had gotten into some great business schools, and then I asked the community, basically admiral in charge of my community, if I could go to business school and still come back into the Navy, and the answer was no. And for me, I had already made up my mind that I really wanted to go to business school, and I would have stayed in the Navy, but since that wasn't an option available to me, I decided at that point that I would definitely be getting out of the Navy. And for me, it was really important to go to a business school program, because it's something that I had always been interested in and aligned with my personal interests and school. I enjoy school and learning. Mm. I had also, it's important to note that I did a lateral transfer simultaneously in the military into a designator that I thought would put me into a part of the Navy that I was more passionate about than what I had previously done, which is driving ships.
What was that designator? What did you transfer to?
I was transferring to engineering duty officer.
Okay. Yep.
So I had a great path ahead of me to stay in the Navy that I was really excited about. It's just that I had what to me was a more exciting opportunity that I couldn't also do with the Navy. So that's when I knew for sure that I needed to get out.
And it sounds like it was almost like dipping a toe in the water of just seeing, let me just apply a couple spots and see where I get in, and then and then see, you know, where to take that, whether that's within the military or outside.
Yes, and for me, I actually, my dipping my toes in the water, my decision personally was to only apply to just a few of the top schools, because I had made the decision in my mind that my path in the military was actually one that I was really excited about, and I was only willing to give that up for a really sort of a top grad school program.
Yep. Yep. Now, I took a similar decision as well of like, you know, if I'm going to go this path, I just want to go to try and go to one of the best programs. And I think that's important to consider. And when you did transition, did you choose to do the reserves, or how did you approach that decision?
I did choose to join the reserves, and I drilled for 3 years. I just recently transferred to the IRR from the drilling reserves. And my reason for joining the reserves was really simple. I just wasn't done wearing the uniform and doing that work that clearly to me was about serving my country. As I mentioned, I had a path lined up in the Navy that I was excited about. And so there was a piece of me that still needed to be connected to that, and the reserves fulfilled that need for me. I did end up switching to the IRR there after 3 years, and that's because I wasn't in a place in my career and my family life where I was willing to be involuntarily deployed. Mm-hmm. But knowing that the current state of the drilling reserves is that you can have a window of 2 years where you can't be involuntarily deployed, I was excited to take that opportunity.
That's great. And so I'm thinking, if you did that for 3 years, did that spill over to your time at Nest, or was that just while you were at business school?
It did. So it was 2 years overlapped while I was in business school. And then the my first year at Nest, I was doing the drilling reserves.
How was that? So as I understand the reserves, it's a weekend a month, 2 weeks a year. I'm just curious how Nest accommodated that in your schedule.
Sure. So my company, Google, is sort of the parent company of Nest. They have a policy that allows folks to take essentially military leave. So this was an important consideration for me, and actually where I was applying for a job was what their policies were around being able to support my career in the reserves. So Google just had has a great policy, and they're very accommodating.
That's really exceptional. I imagine they're in the as with everything, in the top of all the industry and supporting people in that way. And I think that's really awesome.
Yes. And one other thing to note is that I came into, when I had this discussion with my manager about the fact that I was a reservist and that I could potentially be deployed and maybe would need these 2 weeks a year to be gone. This was very foreign to my manager. He just never even understood this concept or anything. And so the onus was on me to be sort of express my commitment and how important it was for me to make that work with my job. So a little less in an asking for permission way to do it, and rather, can we see how we can make this work because it's what I need to be the best me.
That's great. That's great. I love that thought of the reserves kind of standing as a transition for you of still meeting that need of the camaraderie and the service. And, you know, I was honestly intimidated by it because I felt like I'm going to have all of these normal responsibilities and then reserves on top of it. So I chose to make a clean break, but it's, I could see how that would have been nice to preserve some continuity in my life and have that connection to something that meant a lot to me.
Yes, definitely. I found it really difficult actually to make the time for the reserves. And I started to feel over time that it wasn't just something extra for me to do. It was started to become something that was replacing things that I might have wanted to do a little more.
Yep.
And so that's something I couldn't have known for sure would happen until I actually experienced it myself. As mentioned, the reserves has that kind of window in the beginning where you can't be involuntarily deployed, if that's also a consideration that one is thinking through.
That's great. But, and I wanted to talk a little bit about your decision to go to grad school. So you already touched on the desire to go to business school and to learn more about business. I was just curious to learn a little bit more about your decision-making process. Having already had a master's degree, what really drove you to seek another?
Sure. I love school. And I enjoy that it's kind of this way to sort of work on your learning that doesn't set you back, I think, in terms of your career. So that's something my husband, for example, he did not go to grad school as part of his transition out of the military, and he was sick of school, I think was the bottom line there. And I loved it. Yeah. So the way I was kind of thinking about it is I got my first master's degree immediately after college, and that is simply because there was an opportunity there for me to do it, and so I just sort of took that opportunity. And then after many years, I was feeling over and over again like I was really interested in business school programs, so that's why I pursued it later.
That's great. And having gone through the application process, I'm wondering if anything stands out as advice you would give to anyone on active duty who's thinking of applying to a top-tier business school.
Sure. I think for me, some things that worked was my commitment to quality of my applications over quantity of them, and especially in round one, sort of the first rounds and of applications. So I just like went for broke and went for, you know, some really top schools that were kind of ranked highly in various polls. And I just applied to three in round one, and I did nothing but that in my free time. I was so focused on it. I studied really hard for the tests. I did my essays over periods of months trying to perfect them. And I was really going for quality over quantity. And the next set of advice is maybe thinking through how to express your accomplishments, especially in your essays and interviews, in a humble way. I think that great business schools really appreciate humility. So somehow figuring out how to build that into your application. And then the last thing is that if you do have the opportunity to do interviews for a school program, is just be ready to tell critical stories about that you have experienced throughout your military career, sort of have those stories lined up ahead of time and really have them practiced and that show your accomplishments while showing humility and that really express the work that you've done.
Oh, I think that's great. I mean, especially the military is at least stereotyped as with a lot of bravado and a lot of pride. And so introducing that dose of humility, I think, goes a long way. And I definitely agree. I just feel like the more and more experience I have in the business world, the more I realize the power of those stories to be able to succinctly show, not tell, and to be able to tell, you know, be able to especially translate a military story to a civilian audience. So I think that's really solid advice.
Yeah, I the way I think about it is, and in interviews for anything, whether it's jobs or schools or whatever it is, I have this ongoing one page that I've had for many years now, where it has on it a set of about 10 stories that I keep thinking through. If I have new ones come up in my workplace, I can replace some of the old ones or just add to the list. And I have these stories that I'm always able to tell if I run into somebody or meet somebody new or if it's at an interview. And these set of stories sort of encompass my perspective that I could bring onto someone or a job or a role. And so it's kind of one of the key things that I've done that's helped me when talking with others.
That's great. It'd be interesting to look at how that changes over time or how that story kind of morphs and evolves.
Maybe I put them on the paper so it keeps me honest.
And one last question I had on grad school is I'm just always curious about what you think the military prepared you for the most in grad school, and also where you felt least prepared or kind of what the blind spots were going into grad school.
Sure. I'd say best prepared for me was that I had been a people manager in the military for many years. And so I had this experience of learning a lot, honestly, through lots of mistakes in people management as a young, you know, junior officer. And a lot of my peers in grad school had not yet been people managers. And so this was something that I was able to add value to conversations with, you know, fellow students, and or gave me a different perspective on, instead of thinking through how not to fumble through mistakes, I was thinking about how do I elevate my people management skills. So I think that was something I was best prepared for. And I'd say probably most behind my peers, this one's pretty simple for me. It's like business lingo. I had no idea what the major sort of departments are within a company, like what their names are even. So I didn't know terms like PE and VC, private equity, venture capital. and I didn't even know what some industries did. Like, honestly, I wasn't even sure what consulting meant. And so this kind of lingo allowed my peers to be able to communicate more readily in those first months of that post-military transition. So they could hone in a lot easier on who to talk to and how to search for the right job and all that, where I was in like major learning mode and felt way behind in the beginning.
I echo that a lot. At Stanford, I remember I was actually pretty down at some points talking with, I think it was my brother at the time, and just feeling so far behind in the business lingo. And I remember one of the things he said to kind of boost my pride and kind of help me power through that down period was, you know, it's going to be easy for you to learn the language, to learn Excel, to learn these tools. These are like tools and skills that you can learn in a very tactical way. But it's very hard to do the opposite, like the leadership training that I completely echo what you said about that. It's very hard for someone to get that same experience of leading and managing and making mistakes and figuring out your own leadership style. And I really appreciate that from submarines, but it was... that gap that you mentioned about the knowledge of the lingo was much more extreme than I had anticipated. And I'm grateful for business school for closing that gap and just and filling it in with people. So I knew that this is a private equity person or a venture capitalist person. Yep. You start to realize their stories like you were talking about earlier. But it was a tough 3 to 6 months of just catching up on that.
Yeah, I mean, some things I found myself just Googling basic questions about, you know, just terminology and whatnot, or finding, once I would get, you know, somebody become a closer friend, I'd feel more able to just ask what seemed like dumb questions.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that certainly provided a great environment for it.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted to dive into a little bit. So my understanding of your background is you've done a mix of product and program management, and LinkedIn groups those together as product and program management. So 10% of SWOs go into that field, and it's pretty consistent across all the naval specialties. I was wondering, for a military audience, how would you explain what product management is?
Sure. So I think what I would say is that product managers, they figure out what a business should build for their next product. And when I say next product, it could be an iteration of the current product or an entirely new one or a service. Just they figure out what the business should do next that aligns with the business's skills and that aligns with what customers will want and pay money for. So the product manager is responsible for essentially thinking through that, what the company should do and what customers will buy, and then define the requirements for what that product is going to be. And then the product manager hands those requirements over to an engineering and operations team to essentially build it and make it happen. And then at the end of the day, you put that product that engineering and operations supports, and you put that product out there in the market, and you see how it lands with customers. And the product managers look at how it works with customers and if it's, you know, being purchased and whatnot, and then they repeat the process all over again.
I imagine one of the things that's appealing about the product management role is you kind of get an interface with all the different components of the business. And I'm imagining that you have direct relationships, like you said, with the engineers. I imagine there's some sort of overlap with marketing and with any sort of customer facing client support or account management or whatever you want to call it. But it seems like the product manager role is pretty central in having to pull together all the disparate pieces of a business to bring this product to life or to bring it to improvement.
Yes, definitely. The way I kind of just for a second there. So the product manager kind of in my eyes and my experience does what I described in a program manager. Takes that set of requirements and makes it happen. They figure out all the tasks and the resources and the timelines, and they kind of drive that it happens, that requirement set from the product manager gets delivered. And so, yes, both the product manager and in companies that have program managers, they work together to do exactly what you said. They're like the center of all of the parts across the company coming together to deliver that product. And so, yes, in that way, it's a very cross-functional role and one that I would say has a lot of breadth but not a lot of depth in certain areas. Mm.
And, you know, one question just occurred to me as you were saying that is, you know, if someone was on active duty and what you're describing sounds really interested and they think they want to pursue this, obviously, there's so many different types of product or program managers, but I'm wondering, kind of, you know, what does that look like, or how would someone get there? I'm imagining that a military engineering background would come in handy of being able to have something you could point to with engineering, but I'm just wondering, is it typically MBAs? Is it typically, like, is there kind of a breakdown of the type of people or the requirements to get into that sort of role?
Yeah, I'd say that, and this is where I kind of use one of my, you know, think about stories about how I can show that the role of product manager, or program manager aligns well with what I did is I think about the work that junior officers do when it comes to, you know, the fact that you have your warfare specialty where you it's your profession, whether it's, for me, it was driving a ship. And in that, you're always trying to work on your qualifications to the next thing, part of learning your warfare specialty. But you also have this thing where you're a people manager and you're responsible for, a set of, in my case, sailors. And there's a lot of things to juggle to make both of those things happen in a successful way. And you're not an expert in any, you know, one area, but instead you're juggling lots of teams across your military unit. And so in that way, I think of when I'm thinking of how this aligns, I tell a story of me as, you know, officer of the deck on a ship and how, you know, to accomplish a certain mission that we had, I had to work with all these different teams to come together to make it happen. And understand what the mission was to make sure that we fulfilled it. And so in that way, I think, you know, military officers can prepare themselves by getting themselves in those situations more often so that you can show that you have the experience in working with lots of different teams of people across a broad spectrum to come together and accomplish a mission.
What I love about that example is you're showing very well like how anyone in the military has such a diverse background of just really cool experiences. And what I love is you take that experience and you show that you know what a product or program manager needs to do. And so you kind of tell your history in a way that resonates with that. And it's very true. Like, but you could also take that same surface warfare officer story and showcase another facet for a different type of role.
Exactly.
And I think that's a great concrete example of one way in which you can do that and just kind of really, you know, refine this in a way that's going to resonate with the type of role that you're applying for.
Yes, definitely. And again, kind of knowing in your heart of hearts that you enjoy an environment where you depend on work from others to define your success. Knowing that will help you understand if you really do want to pursue something like a product manager or program manager type role.
And I want to spend the bulk of the time on Nest, but I'm just curious if there's anything about your internship at Apple you'd like to share, either what the day-to-day was like or anything that you learned in that internship or capacity.
Sure. So kind of briefly, I essentially was tasked with finding a way to reduce the rate of hardware issues that causes customers to need a repair or return of one of the generations of iPhone. And so I was like, well, that's broad and hard, and I'm not, okay. So I spent the first third of my internship, about a month, just in discovery mode. I sat in Apple stores. I observed customers coming in. I went back in the Genius Bar where they're doing repairs, and I watched what they were doing. I analyzed a bunch of data about customer support cases and the and reason codes. And anyways, I found this maybe one thing that I could looked like a big reason that customers were having an issue that no one seemed to know, understand what was going on. So then I spent the second third of my summer digging into this particular issue that I had observed was kind of common. And I got to the bottom of what was going on and basically root caused what the issue was, the hardware issue. And then the third part of my summer internship was gaining support for what I thought was the right way forward to save money for the company. And like what the solution was and how we were going to execute it. So that was, in a nutshell, kind of the work that I did for an internship. I think that what was great about going to a company like Apple was that it was really wonderful to go to a big, well-established company to see how things should operate in a successful business. And by it just being part of seeing that experience, I then had that in my mind for the future, whatever place I ended up at, big, small, established company or a newer one, I knew what success looked like, and I could help drive wherever I was to some kind of a more successful state. And so I think that was a great thing about going to a well-established, good company like Apple that I would highly recommend to others.
I love that. I mean, in entrepreneurship for me, so much of my experience has been not having to reinvent the wheel, but learning from the best at any particular thing and just borrowing from that experience. And what I love about what you're describing is it sounds like, I mean, you are going to one of the best organizations in the world at so many different things, and you're getting that experience of working with these people and learning exactly how they do that. And I imagine, you're getting a taste of that role. An incredible brand on a resume already jam-packed with them. So I can see a lot of ways in which that was appealing.
Yes, it was a great experience.
So just diving into Nest, you already talked about kind of what the program manager is. I'm curious how you ended up there, how you ended up choosing Nest as a company, and then what the interview or application process was like.
Sure. So, one of the things I found most difficult about getting out of the military was that there was this giant set of, it was like, the world is your oyster, which is a wonderful problem to have. But there were so many options out there for industry, role, or location. And I just always, for some reason, had this little bit of an interest in Nest and a couple of other companies. And I think it was because the company has a positive impact on the world. There's energy conservation through the use of the smart thermostats. And there's helping protect people with better smoke and CO alarms. And these things kind of resonated to me as sort of like that feeling of being part of something bigger than yourself that you feel in the military. And so for me, Nest, there was this couple of companies I was always interested in, and that was the reason why. And so there was I chose Nest because I went after these couple of companies, and I happened to be able to get an interview and get a job offer there. So Nest chose me as well, and that's how I ended up.
That's great. Any advice for preparing for an interview, like with, I guess in technology in general or Nest specifically, of just advice you would give to a veteran who's thinking of going down that path?
Sure. As I mentioned before, this kind of list of stories have it ready to tell, make them memorable stories, make sure they're specific, have engaged the interviewer in that story so they can feel that they can envision you working in their environment and really tackling problems and doing good work. As far as getting an interview and preparing for just that process of trying to get an interview, basically I had this, short list of companies that had interested me, and it could be a short list of role types or industry or geographic location or whatever it is, but some kind of list that you want to focus on. And every time I talked with someone, through networking, I would just ask them, somehow drop it in conversation, hey, do you know any veterans, that work at this place, this place, or this place? Eventually I found someone who knew a veteran that worked at Nest. And I sent them a cold, note through LinkedIn, just introducing myself and referenced this mutual person that we had, both knew in some way. And then I just asked to come meet them. And I'll tell you, when you make those kind of requests like that, they're really hard to say no to if you're on the other end. And just know that and take advantage of it. Especially the veteran community really wants to help each other out. So this is kind of the way that I was able to get my resume past that sort of online submitting, your resume to a role, and just seems like a black hole sometimes. Sometimes you never even hear back. You're like, did you guys get it? So I think those are some tips for preparing to just get to an interview phase, let alone actually be successful in the interview.
That's great. And it's so encouraging to hear, because a lot of people talk about, especially for business school, a primary reason for going that route is the network. And it's awesome to hear that even with access to one of the best business school networks in the world, you're still able to leverage and get value from that veteran and military network, which is really inspiring.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And one thing I was curious about was just painting the picture of the day-to-day. So in your role at Nest, what does the day-to-day look like and the week-to-week in terms of kind of what you do, the team you work with, hours, just trying to get a sense of what this looks like?
So right now I happen to be in a program manager role that is technical in nature. And I basically work on, in my case, I'm just doing product quality focused technical program management for 2 years at Nest. And this really involved trying to get to the bottom of issues that were affecting the quality on our products. And kind of day to day, I think through how to, how do I quantify those issues so that when I share that information with others, I can get their support in assigning resources, whether it's money or people or whatever it is, to fix those problems. So my day-to-day is figuring out how to figure out what issues are, how to quantify them in ways that people will understand, and then tracking and following through on any resource allocation I do get to fix problems, that actually happens and it's successful at the end of the day. So I do a lot of day-to-day talking with others and thinking through how to communicate complex problems in simplified ways. So that's kind of my day-to-day, a lot of kind of briefing with decision makers and talking with subject matter experts to get to the heart of issues.
Great. And in terms of team, what size of team do you work with? And I'm just curious how that kind of compares to your days on the destroyer or in the surface fleet.
Gosh, that's a tough question because there's so many. Each, it depends on the issue, really. Sometimes complex issues that come up and involve lots of teams of people. If it's a really complex issue, I might be talking with, maybe 30 or 40 different folks to kind of understand it. Some of those being experts, some of them being decision makers, some of them being like customer support people who can help me understand what a problem a customer is having. And so maybe that many. And on the destroyer, probably similar on, you know, a given week when you're trying to, you know, get your division to get something done, or whether you're trying to get a qualification, you're talking with somebody who really understands a part of the ship to learn it a little better. So yeah, it's fairly similar, I think, with a company the size of Nest.
Great. And do you have to travel a lot for your role? And I'm just wondering the lifestyle component, if how often work spills into the weekend or how often you're having to be on the road.
Yeah, sure. I think this is can be very company driven, culture wise, and very personal decision driven here. So travel, I made a choice that I wanted to not travel as much. So I intentionally kind of knew that about myself, that I enjoy traveling now and again, but not as a key component of my job. It was actually one of the reasons why I cut out consulting from an industry that I wanted to look at. I do not travel hardly at all because I intentionally focused on a set of jobs that didn't require it to be successful.
Great. And then similar with what I asked on grad school, I'm just curious how you feel like the military prepared you for your role at Nest. And then where you felt like you most needed to catch up to your peer set there from the military?
Let's see. Oh, and to answer your question about work on the weekends, that was the part where I said it's very company culture driven and personal decision. For me, it's kind of like I go through phases in my own life, depending on my family and situation and whatnot, where I choose how much I want to work outside of the office. And this was, again, something that was important to me, that it would be on my own sort of decision, how much I wanted to work beyond sort of business hours. So I intentionally targeted companies and roles that would let me make that decision. So that's why I'm in the place where I am now, is that I sometimes choose to do a lot of work on the weekends and at nights, and I sometimes choose to not do any at all. So I've had a baby about 8 months ago, and since then I have made the choice to work a lot less on the nights and the weekends, and it's helped me be a lot more focused at work, as a side note. But and I think that you were just asking about things in the military that most helped me.
Just real quick on that, before that. First of all, congratulations on the baby.
Thank you.
What I love about your saying is I literally just read this article this morning on happiness and how defining what you want is one of the most critical components of happiness. And I love this sense of, like, it sounds like you've done a great job of setting boundaries on what you want to do and don't do, and that always has a sacrifice. So like you said, consulting's ruled out because you know it's too much traveling. But yep. Even within your company and your industry, you can kind of define, look, am I going to be the person who stays up till midnight every single night? Maybe for a couple weeks, but not all the time. And I love that proactive establishing of those boundaries, which I imagine not only make you happier outside of work, but also much more productive at work.
Yes, and then something else I'll add, why Nest was attractive to me, is its stage of growth. It's not terribly young, it's not a startup, but it's still in kind of the beginning phases of becoming a well-established company. And I wanted to go there because I want to be a culture maker. And so I know it's what I choose to do for how much work that I do and how much you take on in the weekends and nighttime. I very kind of outward in expressing what that is with other folks around the workplace, because I want to help make the culture be what I enjoy working in. And having a company in this kind of stage of growth, you really can be part of building what that culture is long term for the company. So yes, and this was one of the great benefits of grad school, is the stuff about the happiness research that I learned about pretty early on. And so I've been very keen to every time I notice these things about myself that'll make me happy, I'm very focused on it.
That's great. That's great. And I cut you off just as you were about to dive into kind of the most prepared and least prepared from the military.
Oh, sure. I think most prepared was this idea of I kind of mentioned before, juggling a lot of things happening at the same time in an environment where you really have to depend on others doing work to in order to for yourself to be successful at your job. We really had that in the military. It's kind of like Junior Officer 101. You learn that you're not going to get very far by telling everybody what to do. You got to kind of gain their respect, and you figure that out over time that that's what needs to happen. And I think that really helped prepare me well for a job like product and program management, where you are really working with tons of cross-functional people, and they don't report to you generally. These are all people who report to somebody else, and you need them to you need to figure out how to get them on board with your plan so that you, at the end of the day, deliver results. Let's see, something that I think was probably least, prepared. It was this idea of, the military is a big place and there's a lot to learn about the military. And I think that I just didn't spend any time learning about thinking about businesses outside of the military. I was just so immersed. There was just so much to do inside in my job in the Navy that I really hadn't put much thought about where I could fit in out there in the business world. And so because of that, that's why school was a great way to transition. It really just let me have that time to reflect and learn and think about where I might fit in best.
That's great. That's great. I know we're drawing short on time, so just a couple last questions was I'm wondering if there was any resources that you found while you were in the military on active duty. Mm-hmm. Let me change this a little bit. If someone's on active duty right now and thinking of making this transition, is there any resources you would recommend to them, books, websites, anything that might help them start to get a sense for what they want to do? I didn't want to restrict it to what you actually did in the military because maybe you've read something since then or experienced something that really was eye-opening for you.
Sure. I think that so one decision that came up for me was grad school or not. For my husband and I both. And I think once I was like, yeah, I love school. I want to do more of that, give myself a buffer to transition. Being able to know if you like being a generalist, and I think business school kind of a little bit was great for generalist people, so they can learn a little bit about lots of different parts of a business. And so there's a thought there about, do you want to kind of learn this idea of a little bit across a lot? So that may be something to just think about. Otherwise, resources, all jokes aside, we in the Navy, we called it TAP class, Transition Assistance Program. I don't know if it was called that across the other services, but you know, this thing they make everybody who's transitioning through the military go through. They do things like, hey, here's how you wear a suit. And, you know, there's some stuff, but all jokes aside, there were some really great resources there that helped with resume building. For some reason, I've had a lot of pressure and stress around making a good resume for myself when I was getting out. And I found that there's like a booklet we got in TAP class that told you how you should do a good resume. It said things like start your bullets out with a verb and make sure you identify hard numbers and very specific value add that you were to a job and how to translate military names into more like civilian understandable words. So I think that from TAP class, this kind of like resume building booklets that they provide you was actually a really big, useful resource to me.
I tend to remember TAP class as like an event where I was just trying to get out the door as quickly as possible and multitask or do something else. I think you're right. There's a lot I could have gained from that had I been a little bit more focused in it. And they do cover a lot of things that I just assumed were common sense. And I think that there's so much to bridge that gap. That gulf between military and civilian, it's very, very, it's time well spent.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, and one other thing that just comes to mind is in grad school, one of the best classes I took was this thing about how to make ideas stick.
Yeah.
And it's this book called Made to Stick. And I'm really not a big reader. I'm like a Cliff Notes version of everything, please. And this book in particular, it's kind of at the core of it, it makes you think really hard about when you're networking and talking with others, what can you say or do to make sure that you are sort of memorable to whomever you're communicating with. And that way, later on, when that person you're networking with hears of a job opportunity or meets someone that they think would be a great connection for you, you're at least sticking out in their mind if you think through these kind of things. It's in the way you tell your story and the words you use. And I think that's really important to make networking most effective. So otherwise, you meet a bunch of people at a network event and you move on, and it's like maybe you remember very few of them. I don't know. But this Made to Stick, I thought, was a great book to think through in setting yourself up for success.
That's great. That's great. Well, I know I covered a lot here. Before we wrap up, I'm just wondering if there's anything I missed, any last piece of advice or thing that you would pass on to anyone in the active duty who's thinking of making that switch to the civilian world.
Oh, goodness. yeah, no, I've mentioned a lot, but I do think that probably somehow allowing yourself to have some kind of time of reflection for what really, you know, makes you happy and what you're really truly interested in, and trying to pursue that is probably number one on the list for me. And one of the ways that I really found that I could do this, besides going to grad school, was internships. And you can do an internship not just via, you know, grad school program, but lots of companies have them that you can apply for as a way to get yourself, you know, like you said, dip your toe in the water and see how you like that kind of role or company. So, yeah, doing an internship, I think, is a great way to give yourself that reflection time period if you're not going to go to something like a grad school program.
I love that. I know at the GSB we had Wednesdays off, which was great because you could use that full day to go visit companies or intern. And I remember someone while I was there had given me that advice as well, which is like every break is a potential internship. You could have a week off for Christmas that you could do an internship somewhere. And it's just more about getting data. And you get so much data when you're in an office working with people, doing the actual job, shadowing someone. And you're absolutely right. Someone doesn't have to go to business school to do that. Someone straight out of the military could, you know, maybe not get paid for it, but go and volunteer and get a little bit of exposure. And I feel like even a few days in an office or doing a job, it's a lot more data than nothing at all. And you could probably start to rule out industries or functional roles based on even as little as a week of an internship.
Absolutely. Like, totally.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate your time on this. I'm excited to connect with Jimmy next week. But yeah, I just think that you hit spot on so many things in terms of what you do and your advice. So thank you so much for all of that.
No, thanks. I appreciate it. And good luck to everybody out there looking for jobs.
Yeah. Surface.
All right, folks, a couple quick admin items before we wrap up. I have on the website, beyondtheuniform.io, I've placed different information from this interview. So any of the books she mentions, any of the resources she mentions, you don't need to remember that. Just go there. There'll be links there as well. If you have feedback on how to make these interviews, how to make the website more useful for you, my goal is to give you all the ammo you need to make that transition to civilian life and figure out if that's the right decision for you and what timing makes sense. So if there's something in particular you think would be helpful to yourself and other active duty members, please drop me a note at beyondtheuniform.io. Thanks, and have a great rest of the week.